This is Audible.
Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Million Little Pieces by James Fry. Read by L.J. Ganser. The young man came to the old man seeking counsel. "I broke something, old man." "How badly is it broken?" "It's in a million little pieces." "I'm afraid I can't help you."
"Why?"
"There's nothing you can do."
"Why?"
"It can't be fixed."
"Why?"
"It's broken beyond repair. It's in a million little pieces." Awake to the drone of an airplane engine and the feeling of something warm dripping down my chin. I lift my hand to feel my face. My front four teeth are gone. I have a hole in my cheek. My nose is broken and my eyes are swollen nearly shut. I open them and I look around and I'm in the back of a plane. And there's no one near me. I look at my clothes, and my clothes are covered with a colorful mixture of spit, snot, urine, vomit, and blood. I reach for the call button, and I find it. And I push it, and I wait, and 30 seconds later, an attendant arrives.
"How can I help you?"
"Where am I going?"
"You don't know?"
"No."
"You're going to Chicago, sir."
"How did I get here?"
"A doctor and two men brought you on."
"They say anything?"
"They talked to the captain, sir. We were told to let you sleep."
"How long till we land?"
"About 20 minutes.
"Thank you." Although I never look up, I know she smiles and feels sorry for me. She shouldn't. A short while later, we touch down. I look around for anything I might have with me, but there's nothing. No ticket, no bags, no clothes, no wallet. I sit and I wait and I try to figure out what happened. Nothing comes. Once the rest of the passengers are gone, I stand and start to make my way to the door. After about 5 steps, I sit back down. Walking is out of the question. I see my attendant friend and I raise a hand.
"Are you okay?"
"No."
"What's wrong?"
"I can't really walk."
"If you make it to the door, I can get you a chair."
"How far is the door?"
"Not far."
I stand. I wobble. I sit back down. I stare at the floor and take a deep breath.
"You'll be all right."
I look up and she's smiling.
"Here."
She holds out her hand and I take it. I stand and I lean against her and she helps me down the aisle. We get to the door.
"I'll be right back."
I let go of her hand. And I sit down on the steel bridge of the jetway that connects the plane to the gate. "I'm not going anywhere." She laughs, and I watch her walk away, and I close my eyes. My head hurts, my mouth hurts, my eyes hurt, my hands hurt. Things without names hurt. I rub my stomach. I can feel it coming. Fast and strong and burning. No way to stop it. Just close your eyes and let it ride. It comes, and I recoil from the stench and the pain. There's nothing I can do.
"Oh, my God."
I open my eyes. "I'm all right. Let me find a doctor. I'll be fine. Just get me out of here."
"Can you stand?"
"Yeah, I can stand." I stand, and I brush myself off, and I wipe my hands on the floor, and I sit down in the wheelchair she has brought me. She goes around to the back of the chair, and she starts pushing.
"Is someone here for you?"
"I hope so."
"You don't know?"
"No."
"What if no one's there?"
"It's happened before. I'll find my way." We come off the jetway and into the gate. Before I have a chance to look around, my mother and father are standing in front of me.
"Oh, Jesus."
"Please, Mom."
"Oh, my God, what happened?"
"I don't want to talk about it, Mom."
"Jesus Christ, Jimmy, what in hell happened?"
She leans over, and she tries to hug me. I push her away. "Let's just get out of here, Mom." My dad goes around to the back of the chair. I look for the attendant, but she has disappeared. Bless her. "You okay, James?" I stare straight ahead. "No, Dad, I'm not okay." He starts pushing the chair. "Do you have any bags?" My mother continues crying. "No." People are staring. "Do you need anything?" I need to get out of here, Dad. Just get me the fuck out of here.
They wheel me to their car. I climb in the back seat and I take off my shirt and I lie down. My dad starts driving. My mom keeps crying. I fall asleep. About 4 hours later, I wake up. My head is clear, but everything throbs. I sit forward and I look out the window. We've pulled into a filling station somewhere in Wisconsin. There is no snow on the ground, but I can feel the cold. My dad opens the driver's door, and he sits down, and he closes the door. I shiver.
You're awake.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
Shitty.
Your mom's inside cleaning up and getting supplies.
You need anything?
A bottle of water and a couple bottles of wine and a pack of cigarettes.
Seriously?
Yeah.
This is bad, James.
I need it.
You can't wait.
No.
This will upset your mother.
I don't care. I need it.
He opens the door, and he goes into the filling station. I lie back down, and I stare at the ceiling. I can feel my heart quickening, and I hold out my hand, and I try to keep it straight. I hope they hurry. 20 minutes later, the bottles are gone. I sit up and I light a smoke, and I take a slug of water. Mom turns around.
Better?
If you want to put it that way.
We're going up to the cabin.
I figured.
We're going to decide what to do when we get there.
All right.
What do you think?
I don't want to think right now.
You're going to have to soon.
Then I'll wait till soon comes.
We head north to the cabin. Along the way, I learned that my parents, who live in Tokyo, have been in the States for the last 2 weeks on business. At 4 a.m., they received a call from a friend of mine who was with me at a hospital and had tracked them down in a hotel in Michigan. He told them that I had fallen face first down a fire escape and that he thought they should find me some help. He didn't know what I was on, but he knew there was a lot of it, and he knew it was bad. They had driven to Chicago during the night.
So what was it?
What was what? What were you taking? I'm not sure.
How can you not be sure?
I don't remember.
What do you remember?
Bits and pieces.
Like what? I don't remember.
We drive on, and after a few hard, silent minutes, we arrive. We get out of the car, and we go into the house, and I take a shower because I need it. When I get out, there are some fresh clothes sitting on my bed. I put them on, and I go to my parents' room. They are up drinking coffee and talking, but when I come in, they stop.
Hi.
Mom starts crying again, and she looks away.
Dad looks at me.
Feeling better?
No.
You should get some sleep.
I'm gonna.
Good. I look at my mom. She can't look back. I breathe. I look away.
I look away. I can't look at them. I just wanted to say thanks for picking me up.
Dad smiles. He takes my mother by the hand and they stand, and they come over to me and they give me a hug. I don't like it when they touch me, so I pull away.
Good night.
Good night, James. We love you.
I turn, and I leave their room, and I close their door, and I go to the kitchen. I look through the cabinets, and I find an unopened half-gallon bottle of whiskey. The first sip brings my stomach back up, but after that, it's all right. I go to my room, and I drink, and I smoke some cigarettes, and I think about her. I drink, and I smoke, and I think about her, and at a certain point, blackness comes, and my memory fails me. Back in the car with a headache and bad breath, we're heading north and west to Minnesota. My father made some calls and got me into a clinic, and I don't have any other options, so I agree to spend some time there, and for now, I'm fine with it. It's getting colder. My face has gotten worse, and it is hideously swollen. I have trouble speaking, eating, drinking, smoking. I have yet to look in a mirror. We stop in Minneapolis to see my older brother. He moved there after getting divorced, and he knows how to get to the clinic.
He sits with me in the back seat, and he holds my hand, and it helps because I'm scared. We pull into the parking lot and park the car, and I finish a bottle, and we get out, and we start walking toward the entrance of the clinic. Me and my brother and my mother and my father, my entire family, going to the clinic. I stop, and they stop with me. I stare at the buildings, low and long and connected, functional, simple, menacing. I want to run or die or get fucked up. I want to be blind and dumb and have no heart. I want to crawl in a hole and never come out. I want to wipe my existence straight off the map. Straight off the fucking map. I take a deep breath. Let's go. We enter a small waiting room. A woman sits behind a desk reading a fashion magazine. She looks up.
May I help you?
My father steps forward and speaks with her as my mother and brother and I find chairs and sit in them. I'm shaking. My hands and my feet and my lips and my chest shaking. For any number of reasons. My mother and brother move next to me and they take my hands. And they hold them and they can feel what is happening to me. We look at the floor and we don't speak. We wait and we hold hands and we breathe and we think. My father finishes with the woman and he turns around and he stands in front of us. He looks happy and the woman is on the phone. He kneels down.
They're gonna check you in now.
All right. You're gonna be fine. This is a good place. The best place.
That's what I hear.
You ready?
I guess so.
We stand and we move toward a small room where a man sits behind a desk with a computer. He meets us at the door. I'm sorry, but you have to leave him here. My father nods. We'll check him in, and you can call later to make sure he's all right. My mother breaks down.
He's in the right place. Don't worry.
My brother looks away.
He's in the right place.
I turn, and they hug me. One at a time, and hold tight. Squeezing and holding, I show them what I can. I turn, and without a word I walk into the room, and the man shuts the door, and they're gone. The man shows me a chair and returns to his desk. He smiles.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
How do I look?
Not good.
I feel worse.
Your name is James. You are 23. You live in North Carolina.
Yeah.
You're going to stay with us for a while. You okay with that?
For now.
Do you know anything about this facility?
No.
Do you want to know anything?
I don't care.
He smiles, stares at me for a moment. He speaks. We are the oldest residential drug and alcohol treatment facility in the world. We were founded in 1949 in an old house that sat on the land where these buildings, and there are 32 interconnected buildings here, sit now. We have treated over 20,000 patients. We have the highest success rate of any facility in the world. At any given time, there are between 200 and 250 patients spread through 6 units, 3 of which house men and 3 of which house women. We believe that patients should stay here for as long a term as they need, not something as specific as a 28-day program. Although it is expensive to come here, many of our patients are here on scholarships that we fund and through subsidies that we support. We have an endowment of several $100 million. We not only treat patients, we are also one of the leading research and educational institutions in the field of addiction studies. You should consider yourself fortunate to be here, and you should be excited to start a new chapter in your life. I stare at the man. I don't speak. He stares back at me, waiting for me to say something. There is an awkward moment. He smiles. You ready to get started? I don't smile.
Sure.
He gets up, and I get up, and we walk down a hall. He talks, and I don't. The doors are always open here, so if you want to leave, you can. Substance use is not allowed, and if you're caught using or possessing, you will be sent home. You are not allowed to say anything more than hello to any women aside from doctors, nurses, or staff members. If you violate this rule, you will be sent home. There are other rules,
But those are the only ones you need to know right now. We walk through a door into the medical wing. There are small rooms and doctors and nurses and a pharmacy. The cabinets have large steel locks. He shows me to a room. It has a bed and a desk and a chair and a closet and a window. Everything is white. He stands at the door, and I sit on the bed. A nurse will be here in a few minutes to talk with you.
Fine. You feel okay?
No, I feel like shit.
It'll get better.
Yeah. Trust me.
Yeah.
The man leaves, and he shuts the door, and I'm alone. My feet bounce. I touch my face. I run my tongue along my gums. I'm cold and getting colder. I hear someone scream. The door opens and a nurse walks into the room. She wears white, all white, and she is carrying a clipboard. She sits in the chair by the desk.
Hi, James.
Hi.
I need to ask you some questions.
All right.
I also need to check your blood pressure and your pulse.
All right.
What type of substances do you normally use?
Alcohol.
Every day?
Yes.
What time do you start drinking?
When I wake up. She marks it down.
How much per day?
As much as I can.
How much is that?
Enough to make myself look like I do.
She looks at me. She marks it down. Do you use anything else?
Cocaine.
How often?
Every day. She marks it down.
How much?
As much as I can.
She marks it down. In what form?
Lately, crack, but over the years in every form that it exists. She marks it down.
Anything else?
Pills, acid, mushrooms, meth, PCP, and glue.
Marks it down. How often?
When I have it.
How often?
A few times a week. Marks it down.
She moves forward and draws out a stethoscope. How are you feeling?
Terrible.
In what way?
In every way.
She reaches for my shirt. Do you mind?
No.
She lifts my shirt, and she puts the stethoscope to my chest. She listens.
Breathe deeply.
She listens.
Good. Do it again.
She lowers my shirt, and she pulls away, and she marks it down.
Thank you.
I smile.
Are you cold?
Yes. She has a blood pressure gauge.
Do you feel nauseous?
Yes. She straps it on my arm, and it hurts.
When was the last time you used?
She pumps it up. A little while ago.
What and how much?
I drank a bottle of vodka.
How does that compare to your normal daily dosage?
It doesn't. She watches the gauge and the dials move, and she marks it down and she removes the gauge.
I'm going to leave for a little while, but I'll be back.
I stare at the wall.
We need to monitor you carefully, and we will probably need to give you some detoxification drugs.
I see a shadow, and I think it moves, but I'm not sure.
You're fine right now, but I think you'll start to feel some things.
I see another one. I hate it.
If you need me, just call.
I hate it. She stands up and she smiles, and she puts the chair back and she leaves. I take off my shoes and I lie under the blankets, and I close my eyes and I fall asleep. I wake and I start to shiver, and I curl up and I clench my fists. Sweat runs down my chest, my arms, the backs of my legs. It stings my face. I sit up and I hear someone moan. I see a bug in the corner, but I know it's not there. The walls close in and expand. They close in and expand, and I can hear them. I cover my ears, but it's not enough. I stand. I look around me. I don't know anything. Where I am, why, what happened, how to escape, my name, my life. I curl up on the floor and I am crushed by images and sounds, things I have never seen or heard or ever knew existed. They come from the ceiling, the door, the window, the desk, the chair, the bed, the closet. They're coming from the fucking closet. Dark shadows and bright lights and flashes of blue and yellow and red as deep as the red of my blood. They move toward me and they scream at me, and I don't know what they are, but I know they're helping the bugs. They're screaming at me. I start shaking, 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 shaking. My entire body is shaking and my heart is racing, and I can see it pounding through my chest, and I'm sweating and it stings. The bugs crawl onto my skin and they start biting me, and I try to kill them. I claw at my skin, tear at my hair, start biting myself. I don't have any teeth, and I'm biting myself, and there are shadows and bright lights and flashes and screams and bugs, bugs, bugs! I am lost. I am completely fucking lost. I scream. I piss on myself. I shit my pants. The nurse returns, and she calls for help, and men in white come in, and they put me on the bed, and they hold me there. I try to kill the bugs, but I can't move, so they live in me, on me. I feel the stethoscope in the gauge, and they stick a needle in my arm, and they hold me down. I am blinded by blackness. I am gone. I sit in the chair by the window staring. I don't know what I'm staring at, and I don't care. It's dark, and it's late, and I can't sleep anymore. The drugs are wearing off. The nurse comes in.
Can't sleep?
She checks my pressure and pulse. No.
We have a lounge.
She hands me some pills.
You can watch TV.
She hands me a robe and slippers.
And you can smoke.
I turn and I stare out the window.
Get changed and let me show you where it is.
All right. She leaves and I take the pills and I change. And when I open the door, she's waiting for me. She smiles and she hands me a pack of smokes.
These all right?
I smile. Thank you. We go to the lounge. A television, two couches, an easy chair, some vending machines. The television is on.
You want a soda?
I sit in the chair.
No.
You're okay? I nod.
Thank you.
She leaves and I can feel the pills kicking in. I watch television, but nothing registers. I smoke a cigarette. It burns. A man walks in and he walks up to me and he stands in front of me.
Hey, buddy.
His voice is deep and dark.
Hey, buddy.
Tracks crisscross his forearms.
I'm talking to you.
Scars run the length of his wrists.
I'm talking to you.
I look in his eyes. They're blank.
What?
He points.
That's my chair.
I turn back to the television.
That's my chair.
The pills are kicking in.
Hey, buddy, that's my chair.
Nothing registers.
Hey, asshole, that's my fucking chair.
I watch TV and he's breathing heavy, and the nurse comes in.
Is there a problem here?
This asshole is in my chair.
Then why don't you sit on the couch?
Because I don't like the couch. I like the chair.
James is in the chair. There's the couch or the floor, or you can leave. You decide.
Fuck James! Make him move!
Do you want me to call security?
No.
Then you decide.
He walks to the couch and he sits down on it. The nurse watches him.
Thank you.
He laughs and she leaves, and we're alone and I'm watching television and smoking a cigarette. He stares at me, and he chews his nails and he spits them at me, but the pills are in and the bugs are gone, and I don't care. Nothing registers. I watch the television. Everything slows down beyond recognition. The image blurs, the voices fade. There is no action and no noise, just flickering lights and a symphony of withered voices. I stare at the lights, listen to the voices. I want them to go away, and they won't. My eyelids fall. I struggle to bring them up, but they won't come. The rest of my body follows my eyes. My muscles go limp, and I slide from the chair to the floor. I don't like the floor, and I don't want to be on the floor, but I can't stop myself. As I slide, the surface of the chair holds my robe and scratches the back of my legs, and the robe bunches around my waist. I lift my hand to adjust the robe, and my hand falls back. My mind tells my hand to move, and my mind tells my hand to adjust the robe, but my mind isn't working. My mind isn't working, and my hand isn't working. The robe stays. The man stops spitting his nails at me, and he stands, and he walks toward me, and I can see him coming through the slitted lids of my eyes. I know that he can do whatever he wants to do to me, and I know that I am helpless to stop him. I know that he is angry, and I know from his tracks and his scars and his eyes that he will probably express that anger through some form of violence. If I were able to move, I would stand and meet him with a dose of whatever he cared to bring, but I can't meet him with anything. With each step he takes toward me, the situation becomes more clear in my mind. He can do whatever he wants to me. I am helpless to stop him. Helpless to stop him. Helpless. He stands over me, and he stares at me. He leans down, and he looks at my face, and he laughs.
You are one ugly motherfucker.
I try to say something back. I can only grunt. I could kick your ass right now if I felt like it. Beat you to a bloody fucking pulp. My body is limp. But all I want is the fucking chair. My mind isn't working. And I'm gonna fucking take it. He reaches out, and he grips my wrists, and he drags me along the floor. He drags me away from the chair and into the corner of the room, and he leaves me lying face down on the floor. He leans over, and he puts his mouth next to my ear. I could have beat your fucking ass. Remember that? He leaves, and I can hear him sit down in the chair and start changing the channels on the television. There is a daily sports wrap-up, an infomercial on hair growth, a late-night talk show. He leaves the talk show on, and he laughs when he is supposed to laugh, and he mumbles to himself about how he'd like to fuck one of the guests. I lie face down on the floor. I am awake, but I'm unable to move. My heart beats, and it's loud, and I can see it. The bristles of the carpet dig into my face, and I can hear them. The laugh track on the show booms, and I can feel it. I am awake, but I'm unable to move. I fade. I fade. I fade. Morning comes, and when I wake, I am able to move, and I stand, and I look for the man. He's gone, but my memory isn't, and it won't be for a long time. It has always been a fault of mine. I hold my memory. I go to my room, and when I open the door, I see an orderly setting a tray of food on the desk. He looks at me, and he smiles. Good morning.
Good morning.
I brought you some breakfast. We thought you might be hungry.
Thank you.
If you want anything else, just call.
Thank you.
He leaves, and I look at the food. Eggs, bacon, toast, potatoes, a glass of water, and a glass of orange juice. I don't want to eat, but I know I should, so I go to the chair, and I sit down, and I look at the food, and then I feel my face. Everything is still swollen. I touch my lips, and they crack. I open my mouth, and they bleed. I close my mouth, and they drip. I don't want to eat, but I know I should. I reach for the glass of water, and I take a sip, but it's too cold. I reach for the orange juice, and I take a sip, but it burns. I try to use the fork, but it does too much damage. I break up the toast and push the pieces down my throat with my fingers. I do the same with the potatoes and the eggs and the bacon. I drink the water but not the juice. I lick my fingers clean. When I'm done, I go to the bathroom and I vomit. I try to stop it, but I can't. About half of the food comes up, as does some blood and some bile. I am happy that I have kept half of the food. That is more than I normally keep. As I walk back to my bed, a doctor comes into the room. He smiles. Hi. He's wearing a name tag, but I can't read it. I'm Dr. Baker. We shake hands. I'm going to be working with you today. I sit on the edge of the bed. Are you okay with that? He looks at my face, but not my eyes.
Yeah.
I look at his eyes. How are you feeling? His eyes are kind.
I'm tired of that question.
He laughs.
I'll bet you are.
I smile. These. He hands me more pills. Are Librium and Diazepam. I take them. They're detoxification drugs and important medically because they stabilize your heart, keep your blood pressure down, and help ease you through withdrawal. Without them, you could suffer a stroke or a heart attack or both. He leans forward and looks at my cheek. You'll be taking them every 4 hours in decreasing doses for the next 5 days. I look at his eyes. We're going to take some tests. He's seen this before. And start planning a program for you.
All right.
First, though, we need to try and fix you up a bit. We go to a room. It has bright fluorescent lights and a large surgical bed and boxes of supplies. I sit on the bed and he puts on a pair of latex gloves and he examines my cheek. He picks away the scabs. He opens my mouth. His finger fits through the hole. He gets a needle and some string and tells me to clench my fists and close my eyes. I leave them open and I watch as the needle runs through, inside and out. My cheek, my lip, my mouth. 41 times. We're through, and he's on the phone with a surgical dentist, and I'm sitting on the bed, and I'm shaking from the pain. I can taste heat and the string and the blood. He sets a date, and he hangs up the phone, and he starts washing his hands. We're going to take you into town in a couple of days and get your teeth fixed. I run my tongue along the stitches. I know the dentist, and he'll take good care of you. I run my tongue along the remnants of my teeth. You look as good as new. I let my tongue sit where it belongs.
Don't worry.
He puts on a new pair of gloves and he turns around. Now I need to check your nose. I take a deep breath. He steps forward and he starts looking at my nose. He touches it and I cringe. I can no longer feel my cheek.
This is bad.
I know. I'm going to have to break it and reset it.
I know.
The sooner the better, but if you want, we can wait.
The sooner the better.
All right. He spreads his feet, and he firms himself, and he puts both of his hands on my nose. I grab the sides of the bed, and I close my eyes, and I wait. You ready?
Yeah.
He jerks his hands forward and up, and there's an audible crack. Cold, white light shoots through my eyes and through my spine and into my feet and back again. My eyes are closed, but I'm crying. Blood is streaming from my nostrils. Now I have to set it. He moves his hands to the side, and I can feel the cartilage move with them. He moves them again. I can feel it. He presses up, and it seems to fit. I can feel it. There. He reaches for some tape, and I open my eyes. He puts the tape across the bridge of my nose, and it holds the cartilage in place. It feels solid. He grabs a towel, and he wipes the blood from my face and my neck, and I stare at the wall. My face is throbbing, and I'm squeezing the sides of the bed, and it hurts my hands. I want to let go, but I can't. You all right?
No.
I can't give you any painkillers.
I figured.
The Librium and Diazepam will take the edge off, but you're gonna hurt.
I know.
I'll get you a new robe.
Thank you.
He steps back and he throws the towel in the garbage can and he leaves. I let go of the bed and I hold my hands in front of my face and I stare at them.
They shake. I shake.
The doctor comes back with a nurse and they help me change and they tell me about the tests they're going to give me. Blood, urine, stool. They need to know how much damage I've done to my insides. The thought revolts me. We leave and we go to a different room that also has a bathroom. I piss in a cup, shit in a plastic container, take a needle in my arm. It's simple, and it's easy, and it's painless. We emerge, and the unit is busy. Patients wait in line for drugs. Doctors go from room to room. Nurses carry bottles and tubes. There is noise, but everything is quiet. I go to my room with the doctor, and I sit on the bed. He sits in the chair, and he writes on a chart. He finishes writing, and he looks at me. Except for the dentist, the worst of it is over. All right. I'm going to put you on 250 milligrams of amoxicillin 3 times a day and 500 milligrams of penicillin VK 1 a day. These will prevent any possible infection. All right. Go to the dispensary, and they'll give them to you. Or, if you forget, a nurse will come find you. Okay. Thank you for dealing this morning.
No problem.
Good luck.
Thanks.
He stands, and I stand, and we shake hands, and he leaves. I go to the dispensary, and I stand in line. A young woman stands in front of me. She turns around, and she looks at my face. She speaks.
Hi.
She smiles.
Hi.
She holds out her hand.
I'm Lily.
I take it. It's soft and warm.
I'm James.
I don't want to let go, but I do. We step forward.
What happened?
She glances toward the dispensary.
I don't remember.
She turns back.
Blacked out?
Yeah. She grimaces.
Shit.
I laugh.
Yeah.
We step forward.
When'd you get here?
I glance toward the dispensary.
Yesterday.
The nurse is glaring.
Me too.
I motion toward the nurse, and Lily turns around, and she stops talking, and we step forward and we wait. The nurse glares at us, and she hands Lily some pills and a cup of water, and Lily takes the pills and she drinks the water. She turns around, and as she passes me, she smiles, and she mouths the word, bye. I smile and step forward. The nurse glares at me and asks me my name.
James Fry.
She looks at a chart, and she goes to a cabinet, and she gets some pills, and she hands them to me with a cup of water. I take the pills, I drink the water. I go to my room, and I fall asleep, and I spend the rest of the day sleeping and shoving food down my throat, and waiting in line, and taking pills. It's still dark when my body wakes me. My insides burn and feel like fire. They move, and the pain comes. They move again, and the pain becomes greater. They move again, and I am paralyzed. I know what's coming, and I need to get up, but I can't walk. So I roll off the bed, and I fall to the floor. I lie there, and I moan, and it's cold and silent and dark. The pain subsides, and I crawl into the bathroom, and I grab the sides of the toilet, and I wait. I sweat, and my breath is short, and my heart palpitates. My body lurches, and I close my eyes, and I lean forward. Blood and bile and chunks of my stomach come pouring from my mouth and my nose. It gets stuck in my throat, in my nostrils, in what remains of my teeth. Again it comes. Again it comes. Again it comes. And with each episode, a sharp pain shoots through my chest, my left arm, and my jaw. I bang my head on the back of the toilet, but I feel nothing. I bang it again. Nothing. The vomiting stops, and I sit back, and I open my eyes, and I stare at the toilet. Thick red streams stick to its sides, and brown pieces of my interior float in the water. I try to slow my breathing and my heart, but I can't. So I sit, and I wait. Every morning, it's the same. I vomit, and I sit, and I wait. After a few minutes, I stand, and I walk slowly back into the room. Night is leaving, and I stand at the window and I watch. Orange and pink streaks sail across the blue of the sky. Large birds silhouette themselves against the red of the rising sun. Clouds inch their way toward me. I can feel blood dripping from the wounds on my face, and I can feel my heart beating, and I can feel the weight of my life beginning to drop, and I realize why dawn is called morning. I wipe my face with my sleeve and I take off my robe, which is now covered with blood and whatever I just threw up. And I drop it on the floor and I go to the bathroom. I turn on the shower and I wait for the warm water. I look at my body. My skin is sallow and white. My torso is covered with cuts and bruises. I'm thin and my muscles sag. I look worn, beaten, old, dead. I didn't always look like this. I reach in and I feel the water. It's warm, but not hot. I step inside the shower and I turn off the cold water and I wait for the heat. The water runs down my chest and along the rest of my body. I take a bar of soap and I lather up, and as I do, the water becomes hotter. It slams into my skin and burns my skin and turns my skin red. Although it hurts, it feels good. The heat, the water, the soap, the burns. It hurts, but I deserve it. I turn off the water, and I step out of the shower, and I dry myself off. I climb into bed, and I climb under the covers, and I close my eyes, and I try to remember. 8 days ago, I was in North Carolina. I remember picking up a bottle and a pipe and deciding to go for a drive. 2 days later, I woke up in Washington, D.C. I was on a couch at a house belonging to the sister of a friend of mine. I was covered in piss and puke, and she wanted me to leave, so I borrowed a shirt from her and I left. 24 hours later, I woke up in Ohio. I remember a house, a bar, some cracks, some glue. I remember screaming. I remember crying. The door opens and I sit up, and the doctor brings in a pile of clothes and my pills, and he sets them on the table. Hi. I reach for the pills. Hi. I take them. We got you some fresh clothes. Thanks. He sits at the table. We're going to move you down to a unit today. All right. Usually when a patient moves down to a unit, his contact with us is limited. But in your case, we need to continue to see you. Okay. For the next week, you'll need to come up here twice a day, after breakfast and dinner, to get your antibiotics and your Librium. What I'm giving you is your last dose of diazepam. Got it. He looks at my mouth. We're taking you to a dentist tomorrow. I haven't looked at my mouth yet. He knows what he's doing, and he's a friend of mine. He'll take good care of you. I'm scared to see myself. Stay strong, and you'll be fine. Scared of the hate that my own image can conjure. You should get changed and go wait in the lounge. All right. They'll send someone up from the unit to get you. I can't wait. He laughs, and he stands up. Good luck, James. I stand. Thank you. We shake hands and he leaves, and I change into the clothes he brought me. A pair of khakis, a white t-shirt, some slippers. They're warm and soft and they feel good. I almost feel human. I leave my room and I walk through the medical unit, where nothing has changed. There are bright lights, there is whiteness. There are patients and doctors and lines and pills. There are moans and screams. There is sadness, insanity, and ruin. I know these things, and they no longer affect me. I walk into the lounge and I sit down on a couch. I'm alone, and I watch television, and the latest batch of pills kicks in. My heartbeat slows. My hands stop shaking. My eyelids drop. My body is limp. Nothing registers. I hear my name, and I look up, and Lily is standing in front of me. She smiles, and she sits down next to me. Remember me? Lily, she smiles. I wasn't sure you would. You look pretty juiced. Librium and diazepam. Yeah, I just got off it. I hate that shit. It's better than nothing, she laughs. Talk to me in a couple days, I smile. I doubt I'm going to last a couple of days. She nods. I know the feeling. I don't respond. She speaks. Where you from? I reach for my cigarettes. North Carolina. I draw one out. Got one of those for me? I hand her a cigarette and I light them and we smoke, and Lily tells me about herself, and I listen to her. She's 22 and grew up in Phoenix. Her father left when she was 4, and her mother was a heroin addict who supported her habit by whoring herself to whoever would pay. She started giving Lily drugs at 10 and started forcing her to whore herself to whoever would pay at 13. At 17, Lily ran away to her grandmother in Chicago, where she's lived since. She's addicted to crack and Quaaludes. A man walks into the room, and we stop talking, and the man stops in front of me. He is thin, preppy, nearly bald. He has small, nervous eyes. "James," he smiles. "Yeah." He seems very happy. "Hi, I'm Roy." He holds out his hand. "Hi." I stand and I shake his hand. "I'm here to take you down to the unit." "All right." "Do you have any bags?"
"No."
"Any extra clothes, books?"
"I have nothing."
"A dob kit?"
"Nothing."
He smiles again, nervously. "Let's go." I turn and I look at Lily, who is pretending to watch television.
"Bye, Lily."
She looks up and she smiles at me.
"Bye, James."
Roy and I leave the lounge, and we walk down a short, dark, carpeted hallway. As we walk, Roy watches me carefully. "You know that's against the rules." I stare straight ahead.
"What?"
"Talking to women."
"Sorry."
"Don't be sorry, just don't do it again."
"All right."
"The rules here are for your own good. I suggest that you follow them."
"I'll try."
"Do better than try, or you'll be in trouble."
"I'll try."
We come to a large door, and we walk through it, and everything changes. The hallways are long and lined with doors. The carpets are plush, and the walls bright. There is color and light and a feeling of comfort. There are people walking everywhere, and they are all smiling. We walk through a series of corridors. Roy stares at me, and I stare straight ahead. He tells me about the unit and its rules. There are between 20 and 25 men on the unit at any given time, 3 counselors and a unit supervisor. Each man has a counselor who oversees his recovery program, and the unit supervisor oversees them. Each man is required to attend 3 lectures a day, eat 3 meals a day, and participate in all unit activities. Each man has a job that he is required to complete each morning. Mood-altering chemicals are not allowed on the unit. If you are caught using them or possessing them, you will be asked to leave. Mail is passed out once a day. Unit counselors reserve the right to open and search any and all mail. Visitors are allowed on Sundays between 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock. The staff reserves the right to search and examine any gifts or packages that you are given by visitors. The women are housed in separate units, and contact with them is not allowed. If you see them in the halls, hello is okay, how are you is not. If you violate this rule, you may be asked to leave. Roy stares at me. The rules are serious business. If you want to recover, I'd recommend following them. I stare straight ahead.
I'll try.
We walk through a door marked Sawyer and we enter the unit. We walk down a hall with doors on both sides. Some of the doors have names on them, and some of them are open. I can see men in the rooms. We leave the hall and enter a large open room with 2 levels. On the upper level, there is a soda machine, a candy machine, a large coffee pot, a kitchen, and a large table surrounded by chairs. On the lower level, there are couches and chairs arranged in a circle, a television, and a blackboard. Against the far wall, there is a telephone booth, and there are large sliding glass doors built into 2 of the other walls. The doors open onto large expanses of grass and trees. In the distance, I can see a lake. Men sit at the tables and on the couches. They are reading, talking, smoking cigarettes, and drinking coffee. When I enter the room, they all turn toward me, and they stare at me. Roy smiles.
"Welcome to Sawyer."
"Thanks."
"It's a good place."
"I want to leave."
"You'll get better here."
"Run away."
"Trust me, I know."
"Get fucked up."
"Yeah."
"Die."
"Let's go to your room."
We walk from the upper level of the room to a hall off its far end. The hall is lined with rooms in which I hear people talking, laughing, crying. We stop at a door and Roy opens the door, and we enter the room. The room is fairly large and contains four beds, one in each of the corners. Next to each bed is a small nightstand and a small dresser. A bathroom is off to one side. There are two men sitting on one of the beds playing cards, and they both look up when we enter. Larry, Warren, this is James. The men stand and they walk over to where I am standing, and they introduce themselves. Larry is short and powerful-looking, built like the butt of a sledgehammer. He has long brown hair and a thick beard and a southern accent. He looks as if he's about 35. Warren is in his 50s, and he is tall and thin and tan and well-dressed, and he has a large smile. We shake hands, and they ask where I'm from, and I tell them. They ask if I want to play cards, and I say no. I tell them I'm tired and I want to rest, and I thank Roy, and I walk over to the empty bed, and I lie down. Roy leaves, and Larry and Warren go back to their cards. I close my eyes, and I take a deep breath, and I think about my life and how I ended up this way. I think about the ruin, devastation, and wreckage I have caused to myself and to others. I think about self-hatred and self-loathing. I think about how and why and what happened, and the thoughts come easily, but the answers don't. I hear footsteps, feel a presence. I open my eyes, and there's a man standing over me. He's in his 30s, medium height and thin like a reed with long, bony arms and delicate hands. He's clean cut, short hair, clean shave.
You're new.
He's nervous and hyper.
Yeah.
And his eyes are empty.
What's your name?
James. I sit up.
I'm John.
He sits on the edge of the bed and he hands me a card.
That's my card.
I read it. It says John Everett, Sexual Ninja, San Francisco and the World. I laugh.
Want to see something?
He reaches for his wallet.
Sure.
He opens it and he draws out a faded newspaper article and he hands it to me. The article is old and from the San Francisco Chronicle. It has a picture of a man standing in the middle of a street holding a sign. The headline reads, Man Arrested on Market Street with Sign Reading Cocaine for Sale 3 hours after being released from San Quentin.
That's me.
I laugh again.
I went back for 3 more years.
I hand him the article.
That sucks.
He pockets it.
You ever fuck anybody in the ass?
What?
You ever fuck anybody in the ass?
What are you talking about?
I got into it in prison, and now I'm addicted to it. That and rock cocaine. I thought you should know right off the bat.
I stare at him.
Honesty and openness are very important here. They're part of the program, and since I'm working the program, I wanted to tell you. Is that okay?
I stare hard.
It's fine.
He gets nervous, stands, looks at his watch.
It's time for lunch. You want me to show you the dining hall?
I stand without a word. I just stare. We leave and we make our way through the unit and down another series of halls. As we walk, John talks about himself. He's 37 and he is from Seattle. He grew up in a wealthy and powerful family that has cut him off. He has a 20-year-old daughter whom he hasn't seen in 10 years. He spent 8 years in jail. His father started molesting him when he was 5. We enter a long hall with glass walls on either side of it. In one of the sections, women sit eating their lunches. In the other sit the men. At the end of the hall is a common area with a salad bar and 2 cafeteria-style lines where food is served. John grabs 2 trays, hands one of them to me, and we get in line. As we move forward, I take in my surroundings. There are men and women. There is food. There is talking, but there are no smiles. There are round tables surrounded by 8 chairs. There are people sitting in the chairs. There are plates and glasses and trays on the tables. There are about 125 men in the male section spread among tables that probably hold 200.
There are about 100 women in the female section spread among tables that hold about 150. I get a bowl of soup and a glass of water, and as I walk through the room, I can feel people staring at me. I can only imagine what I must look like. I find an empty table, and I sit down, and I'm alone. I take a sip of the water, and I begin spooning the soup into my mouth. It's hot, and each spoonful shoots a wave of pain through my lips, my cheek, my gums, and my teeth. I eat slowly and deliberately, and I never look up. I don't want to see anybody, and I don't want anybody seeing me. I finish the soup, and for a moment, at least, I feel good. My stomach is full, and I am warm and content. I stand, and I take my tray, and I put it with a pile of other trays, and I leave the dining hall. I walk back to the unit. As I pass an open door, someone calls my name. I stop, and I go back to the door, and a man stands, and he comes from behind a desk, and he walks toward me. He's in his early 30s. He's very tall and very thin. He has dark hair pulled into a small ponytail, and he wears round black glasses. He is dressed in a black T-shirt, black pants, and black tennis shoes. He looks like a grown-up version of a kid who spent his childhood sitting behind a computer and hiding from bullies. "You're James." He reaches out to shake my hand. We shake. "I'm Ken, your unit recovery counselor." "Nice to meet you." He turns and he walks toward his desk. "Come in and sit down." I follow him in, and I sit down in a chair across from him, and I look around his office. It's small and cluttered, and there are piles of paper everywhere, and there are files everywhere. The walls are covered with schedules and small pictures of either people or landscapes, and there is a framed copy of the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous hanging behind him. He reaches for a file, and he sets it on his desk, and he opens it, and he looks at me. "You settling in okay?" "Yeah." "Anything we can do to make you more comfortable?" "No." "We need some more information to round out our file. Do you mind answering a few questions?"
"No."
He picks up a pen. "When did you start using drugs and alcohol?"
"I started drinking at 10, doing drugs at 12.
"And when did you start using heavily?"
"At 15, I was drinking every day. At 18, I was drinking and doing drugs every day. It has gotten much, much heavier since then."
"Do you black out?"
"Yes."
"How often?"
"Every day."
"How long has this been happening?"
4 years or 5 years.
"Do you get sick?"
"Every day."
"How often?"
"When I wake up, when I have my first drink, when I have my first meal, and a few more times after that."
"How many times is a few?"
"Anywhere from 3 to 7.
"How long has this been happening?"
4 or 5 years.
"Do you ever contemplate suicide?"
"Yes."
"Have you ever tried it?"
"No."
"Have you ever been arrested?"
"Yes."
"How many times?"
12 or 13.
"For what?"
"All kinds of shit."
"Such as?"
Possession with intent to distribute, 3 DUIs, a bunch of vandalism and destruction of property charges, assault with a deadly weapon, assaulting an officer of the law, public drunkenness, disturbing the peace. I'm sure there's some other shit, but I don't remember exactly what."
"Are any of the charges still outstanding?"
"Most of them."
"Where?"
"Michigan, Ohio, and North Carolina."
"Have you been going to court?"
"No."
"Are you out on bail?"
"I skipped bail."
"Where?"
"Everywhere."
"Why?"
"I've been to jail. I don't like it, and I don't want to go back."
"You're going to have to deal with the charges at some point."
"I know."
"We'll encourage you to do it while you're here, or at least start the process."
"I'll think about it."
"How have you been making a living?"
"Selling drugs."
"That will have to stop."
"I know."
"Have you ever been to treatment before?"
"No."
"Why?"
"I was never willing to go. I told my parents if they tried to put me in, I'd leave and they'd never see me again. They believed me."
He pauses and he sets down his pen. He looks me in the eye and I can feel that he's testing me, waiting for me to look away, so I don't.
Do you want to get sober?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
Does that mean yes?
It means I think so.
Why?
My life is hell, has been hell for too long. If I keep going, I'm going to die. I'm not sure I want to be dead yet.
Are you willing to do whatever it takes?
I don't know.
I'll ask again. Are you willing to do whatever it takes?
I don't know.
I'll ask one more time. Are you willing to do whatever it takes?
I don't know.
He stares at me. Angry, I won't give him the answers he wants to hear. I stare back.
If you're not willing to do whatever it takes, you might as well leave.
I would rather you not, but we can't help you until you're ready to help yourself. Think about it, and we can talk more. If you need anything, come find me.
I will.
He stands, and I stand, and he comes around the desk, and we leave the office, and we go back into the unit. Men are returning from lunch and are gathering in small groups at the tables, on the couches, in small clumps of fold-out chairs. Ken asks me if I want to meet anyone, and I tell him no, and he leaves, and I watch him walk over to another man and start talking to him. I find a chair, and I light a cigarette, and I take a long, deep drag, and I look at the men sitting around me. They are black and white and yellow and brown. They have long hair, short hair, beards and mustaches. They are well-dressed, and they wear rags. They are fat, and they are thin. They are hard, weathered, worn out, and desperate, intimidating and thuggish, addicted and insane. They are all different, and they are all the same, and as I sit there smoking my cigarette, they scare the living shit out of me. Ken has finished talking to the man, and he announces that it's time for the lecture, so the men stand and begin filing out. My drugs are wearing off, and I need some more, so I skip the lecture, and I walk back to the medical wing, and I get in line. As the line moves forward, I start to feel anxious and nervous and angry. With each step closer to the drugs, the feelings become stronger. I can feel my heart beat faster, and I look at my hands, and they're shaking, and when I get to the counter, I can hardly speak. I want something. I need something. I have to have something. Anything at all. Just fucking give it to me. The nurse recognizes me, and she reaches for a chart, and she looks at it, and she turns around, and she gets my pills from a cabinet. She hands them to me with a small plastic glass of water, and I take them as quickly as I can, and I step away from the counter, and I wait. Almost immediately, I feel better. My heart slows, my hands stop shaking. The nervousness, anxiety, and anger disappear. I turn, and I leave, and I walk toward the unit, and I go to the lecture hall where I sit and I listen to a man explain the relationship between a healthy diet and a sound mind. None of it makes any sense because of the drugs. And at a certain point, the lecture ends and I stand up and I leave and I go back to the unit with the rest of the men. One of them looks like a movie star. And I think I talked to him, but I'm not sure. The afternoon and the early evening slide by in a lidded daze, where the ability to think in any identifiable way disappears, and where every moment seems to be an eternity. Shortly after dinner, I climb into bed, and for the first time in several years, I am conscious of the fact that I'm going to sleep. I open my eyes. My roommates are sleeping, and the room is silent and calm and dark. I sit up and I run my fingers through my hair, and I look down at my pillow, and I see that it's covered with blood. I touch my face, and I realize that I'm bleeding. I stand, and I slowly walk 10 steps to the bathroom, and I open the door, and I go inside, and I turn on the light. I recoil from the brightness, and I close my eyes, and as I wait for them to adjust, I step forward, and I grab the edges of the sink. I open my eyes, and I look up into the mirror, and for the first time in 5 days, I see my own face. My lips are cut and cracked, and they are swollen to 3 times their normal size. On the left side of my cheek, a row of crusted, scabbed stitches hold a deep, inch-long gash together. My nose is bent and swollen beneath its bandage, and red lines stream from my nostrils. There are black and yellow bruises beneath both of my eyes. There is blood, both wet and dry, everywhere. I reach for a paper towel, and I wet it, and I begin softly wiping. Streaks crisscross my cheeks, and scabs break, and I wince in pain, and the towel becomes soaked. I throw it away, and I reach for another. I do it again. I do it again. I do it again. I finish, and I throw away the last towel, and I wash my hands, and I watch the red drift from my skin into the sink and down the drain. I turn off the water, and I run my hands through my hair, and they're warm, and they feel good, and I try to look at myself again. I want to see my eyes. I want to look beneath the surface of the pale green and see what's inside of me, what's within me, what I'm hiding. I start to look up, but I turn away. I try to force myself, but I can't. I turn, and I walk out of the bathroom and into the main room. Larry and Warren and John are all awake and in various stages of dressing. They say hello, and I say hello, and I walk back to my bed, and I get inside of it. As I start to get comfortable, John walks over and stands in front of me.
What are you doing?
What's it look like I'm doing? Going back to sleep?
Exactly.
You can't do that.
Why not? We gotta do our jobs.
What jobs?
We each got a job. We get up in the morning and we do our jobs.
Now?
Yeah.
I get out of bed, and I follow John into the upper level of the unit. Roy sees me, and he walks over to me, and he takes me to the job board, and he shows it to me, and he explains how it works. There's a job. There's your name. The longer you're here, the easier the job. Since you just arrived, you have to clean the group toilets. I ask him where the cleaning supplies are, and he shows me. As I collect them and I head toward the group toilets, he speaks.
Make sure they're clean.
I will.
Really clean.
I heard you. I find the group toilets, two bathrooms off the upper level that are used by the counselors, the men who don't feel like going to their rooms and visitors. They're small, with one toilet and one urinal each, and one sink each. I go inside and I scrub the toilets and the urinals and the sinks. I take out the trash and replace the toilet paper. I mop the floor. It's not fun, but I've cleaned toilets before, so I don't mind. I finish the job and I return the supplies, and I go back to my room, and I go to the bathroom, and I get sick. I haven't had a drink in 3 days, and I haven't done coke in 5, so the sickness isn't as bad as normal, but I'm starting to feel sick in other ways. I close the lid of the toilet, and I flush it, and I sit down on the toilet seat, and I stare at the wall. I wonder what is happening to me. I stand and begin pacing back and forth across the length of the bathroom. I cross my arms and begin rubbing my body. I get cold and a chill shoots up my spine. One second I want to cry, one second I want to kill, one second I want to die. I think about running, but there's nowhere to run, so I pace and I rub my body and I feel cold.